Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to be speaking on swine influenza, which is a challenging topic these days to talk about. There's been so much misinformation given, and it's a fairly complicated topic to talk about, as you're going to see. There's a few issues that I would like to get to, notably the surveillance program that the USDA is preparing to roll out for swine influenza. I want people to understand from what we know about this, what it is and what it will not be. But in order to really make that clear, we're going to have to get into some virology here. So I've tried to limit the amount, but unfortunately, you have to understand some of this or we'll end up creating more misinformation today than information. So please do. If I say something that confuses you, I don't mind if you ask a question in the middle of this, especially when we're talking about the viruses. And then as we get to the end, I'll take questions. I want to be sure we understand this issue, because the reality is, and I'll say it up front here, H1N1, swine influenza, is the most common influenza in swine. It's the most common. We see it every day. So when the media has talked about, you know, we had swine flu, which didn't do the industry any good at all, and then we've switched to a degree to H1N1, but from our perspective, that's the most common one we have in swine. And this new virus is like that virus, but different than that virus. Okay, and now when the USDA is going to be talking about surveillance, they're going to be calling it, now they've chosen, H1N1 flu outbreak virus is what they're calling this new one, trying to distinguish it from the H1N1 that is in the swine population now in the U.S., and they realize that we're going to end up having to talk about this. And we've got to talk about it intelligently, and we've got to be careful to distinguish the two for the sake of the swine industry. So that's what we're going to try and do today. We've been asked a lot of questions in the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory in the last month, and I selected probably the ones that are most relevant to us today. They may change tomorrow. Those being, is the H1N1 flu outbreak virus present in North American swine? Will the ISUVDL standard diagnostic tests for influenza viruses in swine detect the H1N1 flu outbreak virus? In other words, if we send any samples to you, are you going to end up detecting this virus and further damaging us? And what is happening, we're having people not sending samples in, so they're not able to do the job they need to do in regard to the respiratory disease that they have in their pigs. And respiratory disease is the most costly disease we have in the finishers in our swine units. Does ISUVDL have a test for rapidly differentiating the H1N1 flu outbreak virus from endemic influenza viruses in North American swine? Is there going to be a surveillance program for the H1N1 flu outbreak virus in Iowa swine? And if so, and this is the big question, what will be the impact on swine influenza testing at ISUVDL and on their clients? Okay, and we desperately need to answer those questions as soon as we can. In order to talk intelligently about this now, we're all going to have to become virologists, unfortunately. This is an influenza virus. Like all viruses, they don't respond to antibiotics. They cannot reproduce themselves outside of cells within our bodies. So they enter cells, and inside the cell, they use the cell's machinery to replicate themselves, and then they're released, and they go out and find another host that they can get in the cells again and replicate. That's true for all viruses. Influenza viruses is different than some viruses in this. It has 8 separate genes that sit within the site of these, and these are arranged from largest to smallest, and they're given names in order here. Whenever we're talking about influenza, they either arrange these largest to smallest left to right or top to bottom in a diagram, and you'll probably see some more of these before this is over. We've got to become familiar with the names of some of these genes because they are what's different about this new virus. So as we go through these genes, these first 3 genes are PB2, PB1, and PA, and those genes each code for the production of proteins represented by these 3 different shape things that are associated with each other. Together, the 3 proteins form the polymerase activity that reproduces the nucleic acid in these, and it's attached to each one of these genes. The next gene is called the HA gene. It's one of the most important ones that we talk about with this virus. It produces the protein that forms all of these clubs on the outside of the virus. And the HA protein, that is the H1 protein in the case of the viruses we're talking about, is one of the most important proteins in this virus because the end of these clubs are what attach to host cells in order to get into the cells so that they can reproduce themselves. And if the immune system can cover those up, they can't attach, and that's one of the primary forms of immunity against this virus. So we talk a lot about which kind of HA these viruses have because that determines whether vaccines will protect against them. It determines whether previous exposure to one influenza virus will protect against another influenza virus. So in the laboratory, we do a lot of testing to determine what kind of HA viruses have inside of them. The next one is the nucleoprotein, the neuraminidase, which is the other club on the outside, the matrix gene, which produces this protein, which forms the inner shell of this ball of the virus, and then the last one are non-structural proteins. Influenza viruses, we classify them based on the two external proteins, the HA and the NA, and there are 16 types of HA that are known, numbered 1 through 16, and there are 9 types of neuraminidase known, numbered 1 through 9. Any single influenza virus can only have one of each of those. So we tend to give them names according to those two numbers. All of these types are represented by viruses in waterfowl, where they're infected with subclinical infections. It doesn't cause disease in them, and they're released from them. Few of these have gotten from waterfowl into other mammalian species, and the two species we're most concerned about now are swine and people. They're obviously in both of those species, but the same groups of viruses don't typically reside in the same mammalian species, but they'll occasionally cross over. And that's what we're talking about with these viruses. That's the problem. Okay, in North American swine, these are the most common ones, H1N1, H3N2, and H1N2. Those are the most common influenza viruses we have in North American swine, and as I've already said, H1N1 is the most common. Now, in order to talk about how we got to where we are with this new virus, we have to talk about something called antigenic shift or recombination. It's also termed reassortment. And I want to describe what that is. First of all, let's look at the annual incidence of swine influenza virus infection. These are cases from our laboratory that we do diagnostics on. And this is reported. If we take as 100% the total number of submissions we have to our laboratory each year where they're reporting respiratory disease and we test for swine influenza, we actually find swine influenza. If you look, and what I want to show you, we're finding swine influenza less frequently in swine in the U.S. than we have in previous years. It's been on a steady decrease, and I'm sure that's from changes in management as well as increased vaccine pressure that we're seeing that. So swine influenza is not on the increase in our swine herds. It's actually on the decrease. And this is looking at the same historical data, but in this case what we're looking at are which kinds of the hemagglutinin we're finding on these viruses. And I think you'll see that all along, this is the H1 hemagglutinin compared to the H3 hemagglutinin. So we're finding the H1 hemagglutinin represented far more common, and most of these viruses are H1N1 followed by H1N2. And the point of this is H1N1 is very common in swine, very common. Now, I want to talk about antigenic shift, and we're going to talk about what this is so that we can then get down to specifics about what the new virus is relative to the endemic swine influenza viruses that we have in our swine herds. If you have a person, and let's take a person for an example here, or a pig, but a person that has influenza that they contracted from another person, and they're working on a swine farm, they could potentially also contract an influenza from the pigs if the pigs have influenza. It's uncommon. That's a very uncommon thing to have happen, but it does. And if that's the case, and the same pig or the same person is replicating two different influenzas, you're infected with them at the same time, then the potential exists for two different influenza viruses represented by the red one and the yellow one to enter the same host cell at the same time. So both viruses are using this host cell machinery to reproduce themselves at the same time, which means that all eight genes from this virus and all eight genes from this virus are being multiplied inside of the cell at the same time with thousands and thousands and thousands of copies of them floating around, as well as all the other proteins needed to make new virus particles, whoops, like this, and be released. Now, most of the virus particles that would be released would be exactly like this virus and this virus because they tend to like to reassociate with their own parts. They've gotten used to themselves. They reassemble in that way. But every once in a while, one of these viruses will pick up a gene or more from the other virus that's in the cell at the same time. And when they assemble, they get a mixture of the genes. And that's called a reassortant or a recombinant virus. Okay? Very important thing that happens with influenza viruses is recombination or reassortment. And in this case, this is demonstrating that the fourth gene in this virus ended up getting picked up by a red virus. And because the gene was picked up, the gene produced the protein. When this goes into other cells and causes an infection, this gene will produce the external hemagglutinin that was on this virus, although the whole rest of the virus is this virus. Okay? And when that happens, it completely changes this virus's, the way it's viewed by the immunity of the body, because as I told you, this is the most important protein regarding immunity on the virus. Okay? So things can change very rapidly when this shift occurs. Most of these reassortant viruses don't survive because when they try and replicate, they don't do as good a job as these and they get smothered and they die out. So this isn't a big deal most of the time, but once in a while, one of these things actually has an advantage and it starts to outcompete all the others and then it becomes established in a population. And that's what's happened with this new H1N1 flu outbreak virus. We're not used to having these H1N viruses in people. The reason the CDC got so concerned is because it seemed to be becoming established in the human population, and we were transmitting it one to another. That's unusual for H1N1 viruses. So now we're going to go ahead and we're going to look historically at what recombination has done to the viruses we see in the swine population. This has been occurring predominantly since 1990. Prior to 1990, we had one influenza virus that was in our swine population in North America called the classic H1N1 swine influenza virus. From 1900 until 1990, it's the only one we found. So all of the genes in it had been in it for a long time, and in this case, they're represented by this light blue. So that's our classic swine influenza virus. Then, in 1998, we found this first triple reassortant H3N2 virus emerged. Now, when we did sequences of each of the individual genes in this emergent triple reassortant H3N2, what we found was that it was actually carrying genes from an avian virus. The PB2 and the PA gene were from an avian virus, likely from migratory waterfowl or from domestic turkeys, something like that. It had the PB1, the hemagglutinin, and the neuraminidase from a human H3N2 virus. And it turns out that this gene, and this gene came from the most predominant influenza virus that was affecting the human population in the U.S., at this time. So we actually had a person infect a pig, and we had a recombination event happen there, or we had a pig infect a person, and a recombination event happened there, then it got back into pigs. this triple reassortant, because pigs had no immunity against H3 in the U.S., it roared across the U.S. in the next 2 to 3 years. And we had a new virus established in our swine population. So now we had a swine population with H1N1 and H3N2 in it. Well, because we had this in a lot of the swine herds at the same time, those two viruses had the opportunity to recombine a lot. And so almost immediately, if you look at these two viruses and you look at mixing up the genes of them, what happened was this virus started to outstrip this one for a while because there wasn't any immunity, and then it picked back up this HA gene in recombination, and this H1N2 triple reassortant emerged, which is this virus with this gene substituted. And the same thing happened here. We had a triple reassortant H1N1 that is this virus that picked up this gene again and this gene again. Today, in our swine population, we do find this H1N1 classic, but not very commonly. I showed you that H1N1 is the most common virus we have. It is today. It was prior to 1998, but it's not the same virus. The virus we have today is this virus. It's a triple reassortant. It has human gene, avian gene, and mostly pig genes in it. That's the virus we have in our U.S. swine. Apparently, this allows the virus to replicate a lot better because all of the viruses that are common now have this combination of genes. Now we get to what happened with this new virus. Now we can describe what it is. This is the same line that I just showed you, with this being the most common virus we have in swine in North America today. This is the H1N1 flu outbreak virus that is a quadruple reassortant. And you'll notice it's exactly the same as the one we have in pigs in North America, here and here. And then we add these two genes. And those two genes have never been seen in swine influenza viruses in North America as far as we know today. They aren't here. And that's what's caused everybody confusion. It's like, where did this virus come from? Because these genes, I show them in a dark blue, they actually are they're in the most common influenza viruses found in swine in Europe and Asia, but not in North America. Okay? So the assumption immediately was that this virus came from pigs in Mexico and that the reassortant event occurred in pigs. It would make sense. They're all pig genes. And apparently something came from Europe across into the pigs and then it reassorted. So they immediately started testing pigs around where the first people were, but they were surprised it wasn't there. Okay? Then everybody started asking, well, is it here? We're taking a hit on our swine markets. You know, I mean, we're getting killed because of the negative press. What is the future for the swine industry? What's the truth? What are we going to have to deal with? We need to find out soon. So in our laboratory, we ask the question, is it here? Is it in Iowa? We do work all over the United States in our laboratory, as does the University of Minnesota's laboratory. Our virologist, K.J. Yoon, went back in the viruses that we have saved back, and he selected 125 H1N1. He selected H1N1 viruses because he knew it would be in that group, and they were from cases in the last 6 months. And he actually sub-selected. This wasn't a random sampling. He said, I want to be sure I cover every region of Iowa to ask whether this virus is in Iowa. So he selected those viruses. He completely sequenced the neuraminidase and the M genes from the viruses, and those are the ones that are unique in this H1N1 flu outbreak. They're the dark blue ones I showed you. So he sequenced them. Then he compared the entire sequence of nucleotides in those genes to the new outbreak virus as well as all of our standard ones we have in swine. What he found was that absolutely none of this H1N1 flu outbreak virus was detected. And that is a statistically valid sample. We're sure it's not in Iowa at this time. Okay? And so far, no one has found it, although I'll tell you, not many laboratories have the testing capabilities to do this on a routine basis. But we haven't found it so far. No one has in North America, with the exception of the single report in Canada, where the pigs were infected from a person infected with this virus that had recently come from Mexico. Okay, will the ISUVDL standard diagnostic test for influenza virus and swine detect this H1N1 flu outbreak virus? Yes, they will. Most of our standard tests will detect it, but they detect it as only an H1N1 virus, which is what most of our viruses are. So we would just assume it's a regular swine virus. Without doing more work, we can't tell what it is. So it will detect it just fine. And these are all of the tests that we normally run in our laboratory on routine influenza cases. And most of those tests would be positive because it's an H1 virus, but it won't tell us, it won't identify it as the outbreak virus. All right? So when submitters are submitting cases to our laboratories, the answer to them, if we're doing this, is sure, we can detect the virus, but absolutely not can we identify it using these tests as the outbreak virus, and we are not reporting that to anybody. We've had a tremendous drop in cases coming in because of that fear at this point. But do we have a test that will detect the outbreak virus? Indeed, we do. We have developed a rapid test for that virus. We developed it because we knew that the USDA was implementing a surveillance program. I believe there was a Reuters news release yesterday, little teeny blurb that came out where the USDA began admitting that this is in the works. It has been. It's going to be implemented by states. The diagnostic laboratory has been working with the state so that we know what our role will be in that. We'll be doing the testing for that in the state of Iowa. It is a PCR test for a unique segment of the M gene in that H1N1 virus. It is positive only for the H1N1 flu outbreak virus. It is negative for all known endemic North American swine influenza viruses. It is a very specific test, and that's important to us. Okay, I've already said yes. The details aren't finalized. The USDA has not told us when this is actually going to begin. But this is the substance of the program that's going to be rolled out. As near as we know it, this is what's been given us by the state of Iowa. It's going to have three surveillance streams. Number one, swine that are epidemiologically linked to a human case of the H1N1 flu outbreak virus. So if somebody's diagnosed with this and they're working in a swine unit, they're on a swine farm, then those swine are going to be tested. I don't think that's a surprise to any of us, you know, at this point. Secondly, swine observed with influenza-like illness at first points of concentration, exhibitions, fairs, sale barns. Okay? The one that we've been the most concerned about, because it affects the industry as a whole, is this third one. Submissions to veterinary diagnostic laboratories. And I can tell you there has been a lot of input to the USDA on this by the Pork Board, by the National Pork Council, by the American Association of Swine Veterinarians, other industry-related groups. And the USDA has listened very well to us, and they had to understand more about some of these things I was telling you in order to do what we needed to have done for the industry. And in this case, the only cases that are going to be tested are cases that are voluntary testing by the submitter or by the owner of those pigs, all right? And in our laboratory, we are going to require this in writing, an authorization form in writing that says, yes, I'm a voluntary participant in the program, before we will set this test. And that is the only test that will identify this virus. So we will not be running that test on anything that comes into our laboratory that we don't have written permission to run it on from the submitter in this case. Okay, so I guess I just said that. Any positive test results on that test must be reported to the state and to the USDA, all right? But we will be running that test on the submissions brought to us by the state veterinarian from those collection points and the samples that they're collecting, but the samples coming to our laboratory will be strictly voluntary. And I guess I just want to reemphasize, I've said it before, the standard test to detect endemic swine influenza viruses that we have been running all along will be run as usual. And they will detect all types of influenza virus to determine whether they're H1, H3, N1, or N2, but they will not identify that flu outbreak virus.